This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Well, it's been another week or two of total shit show. Let's see. All of these kids are still alone and in jail, essentially. And even though they passed something that said they have to reunite them, we don't know how that's going to go. And the notice that there's going to be a retirement on the Supreme Court really fucks us, at least for the rest of my lifetime. So it was kind of this bright, shining moment this week when I read about this story and this person who we have on the show today. So let me just give you a little background. In 1994, journalist Donna Minkowitz wrote a cover story for The Village Voice about the life and death of Brandon Tina, a young trans man who was brutally raped and murdered along with friends Lisa Lambert and Philip Devine in Falls City, Nebraska. Director Kimberly Pierce said in an interview that Minkowitz's article had been the major inspiration for her film about Brandon's life and murder, Boys Don't Cry. This week, 24 years later, Minkowitz wrote a piece called How I Broke and Botched the Brandon Tina Story, where she revisits her investigation and writing, points out and apologizes for many errors, including misgendering and misunderstanding Brandon's identity. This thing is kind of rare, actually. Raymond emailed me a link to the piece, and I dove into it, and I was just struck by her candor, her veracity, and her ability to put her ego aside and own up to mistakes, give context for them, and then essentially redo her story with a new lens of greater understanding and thoughtfulness. It humbled me as a writer, brought me to reflect on my own past missteps, and it modeled that thing Maya Angelou says, which I believe, when we know better, we do better. So I was having so many thoughts and feelings about this article. And of course, Raymond was reading my mind and booking her for the show. So let me tell you a little bit about her. Donna Minkowitz is the author of the memoir Growing Up Golem, which Kirkus lauded for bringing a defiant, playful energy to writing about her difficult and dark past. And Lilith called fascinating, compulsively readable, with fierce imagination and compelling prose. She won a Lambda Literary Award for her first memoir, Ferocious Romance, and has also written for the New York Times Book Review, Slate, Salon, The Nation, New York Magazine, and Minkowitz was a columnist for The Village Voice for 7 years and is the winner of a GLAAD Media Award. I am beyond honored to welcome her to my show. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Donna.
Tristan, it's so great to be here. Thank you.
So let me get my bias out of the way. I just like to speak these and be transparent that you wrote for The Village Voice for 7 years. I wrote for The Village Voice for almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. We overlap slightly. But when I was a baby dyke growing up in New York City, you were a fucking legend. And like you were smart and unapologetically queer and out and radical and wrote about sex. And I feel like you're one of the people who paved the way for my career in writing about sex. So I need to thank you for that.
I am seriously blushing, but thank you.
It's all true. And so it was like I always thought you were a badass. And then I read this article and I thought, God, no one does this. No one looks back. no one, like I said, sets their ego aside. No one actually puts themselves out there for even more criticism than the criticism of the original piece, right? So tell me why you decided now to write this piece about your regrets about the original piece.
Well, I've been regretting the article for a really long time. Trans activists protested it when it came out in 1994. Why now? I was defensive at first, to be honest with you. My initial reaction was, what? No, this is an article about how horrible the murder of this person was and this horrible hate crime and rape. So I was wounded for a while when trans activists very correctly criticized my piece. I was really a bit defensive, but over time I learned many things about trans people that I had been completely ignorant of, and for quite a few years now, I've been wanting to write a piece apologizing for the story and how I wrote it. And I actually did apologize in an interview 4 years ago in the San Francisco Bay Guardian, which is the LGBTQ paper in the Bay Area. I was there for a book tour, and the interviewer said, is there anything else you'd like to say? And I just said, I really want to apologize to the trans community for misgendering Brandon Tina. Anyway, but, it was one article, and I think very few people read it. And I had been wanting to really talk about it in a bigger way. And then when an editor at the Village Voice approached me, thinking that the 25th anniversary of the murder was approaching. It'll be 25 years in December. Did I want to write a piece revisiting it? And I jumped at the chance.
What's so interesting about your piece and your piece happening right now is that you were deeply embedded in queer community and politics and activism. So this wasn't a case of like, quote unquote, insensitive journalism, right? Which, of course, we do have examples of still when it comes to trans folks. This calls to mind the recent piece in The Atlantic by Jesse Singel about transgender teens, which people are rightly furious about. But what struck me is like it's not like, hey, I did this article about, this group of folks in Peru, and that's not really my community or my culture, and I missed a bunch of stuff because I'm not part of it. I mean, did it feel like harder to own up to it because you're in that community?
Yeah, it definitely was harder because of that. I mean, the whole discussion of my article, the criticism of my article, from trans activists at the time, and from one Stone Butch activist as well, was harder to hear because I thought of the people who were critiquing me as my allies, and I'm one of you. What do you mean? I don't know everything there is to know about this. I mean, one of the issues is that I read Brandon as a cis lesbian who I thought suffered from internalized homophobia, and I think I and a lot of other lesbians wanted to reclaim Brandon's story as this exciting, like, wow, like, what if I go now? And what if I go right now and live as a man, despite the fact that I'm not trans? What if I date women and be a straight man? And what would that be like, in kind of a sense of adventure? But I realized finally that that was not who Brandon was.
Yeah, and it was personal for you, and I want to talk about the personal pieces, which you talk about. But we have to take our first commercial break. I don't know how that happened. It just did. Okay, so let's take a break, hear from the companies that keep the lights on. And when we come back, more with Donna Minkowitz. So stay tuned.
Sharpen your pencils and polish your apples because the Pleasure Chest is taking you back to school. The Pleasure Chest is the only adult boutique that offers free weekly workshops through their Pleasure Ed program, which is open to folks of all genders, experiences, and orientations who are looking to increase their sexual IQ. With classes ranging from strap on, get off, to the ultimate O, to spank someone happy, education has never been so stimulating. Attend any workshop at the Pleasure Chest and receive 15% off your purchase that night. Bring a hot study date or pick up some skills yourself. Check out pleasurechest.com for a complete listing of upcoming events nationwide and use the code Tristan at checkout to enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
Happy Pride from the Pleasure Chest. All month long, the Pleasure Chest is showing their love with a series of queer-themed workshops designed to give folks a safe space to explore identity, gender, and sexuality. Don't miss classes on queering your sex, strapping it on, anal play, tantra for queers, a range of SM topics, plus special guest educators Damon Holtzum and Sunny Rogers. Remember, when you attend any workshop at the Pleasure Chest, you receive 15% off your purchase that night. Bonus! You can also find Pleasure Chest's street teams with awesome giveaways at Pride Parades in Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago. Visit pleasurechest.com for the full lineup of events and curated queer collections, such as M4M, Queer Couples, and Strap On, Get Off. Use the coupon code Tristan to receive a free massage candle with every purchase and Pride on.
Life on the Swing Set is heading to paradise for the seventh time. And once again, we're taking over Desire Resort Riviera Maya in Cancun, Mexico.
With this year's hosts, me, Cooper, Ginger, Dylan, JV and Chara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, and author, podcaster, and feminist porn filmmaker Tristan Taramino, our takeover allows us to mold the resort in our geeky, sexy, and inclusive image with orgies, classes about pegging, flogging, and fisting, theme nights, a full dungeon night, naked karaoke, mutual masturbation, and massages.
From November 3rd through the 10th, 2018, this beautiful all-inclusive resort will be full of sexy swing setters from every letter in the LGBTQA spectrum. Poly, swingers, nudists, kinksters, doms, subs, and those who are just curious about what a week at a sexy resort offers.
We take all the best of the swing set. Our values, our experience, our co-hosts, our community, and we bring it all together with the best resort staff on earth to create a queer, kink, and poly-friendly, consent-aware, and sexy-as-hell experience for everyone who joins us.
To come with us on our Swing Set Takes Desire 2018 trip and hear us podcast about our previous trips, head over to ssdesire.com. We'll be there to welcome you home.
Are you LGBTQIA, genderqueer or gender variant, a sex worker, an activist, a polyamorous person? Well, the Open List features therapists, sexuality and relationship coaches, traditional and alternative healthcare providers, mediators, lawyers, and more who are poly-aware, kink-competent, sex-positive, queer-affirming, and anti-oppression. They work with clients with alternative sexualities and relationship structures, including open relationships, polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, swinging, BDSM, and kink. They serve the unique needs of folks who think and live outside the box. To search for a professional in your area, go to the open list at openingup.net. If you're a professional who'd like to be listed, use the coupon code OPENTRIAL for a free 1-year trial.
Streaming live. The leader in internet talk radio. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Donna Minkowitz, and we've started talking about this article she wrote for The Village Voice back in the 90s, and then a new one revisiting that piece called How I Broke and Botched the Brandon Tina Story. And you started to talk about this before the break, which is like a great lead-in to my next question, which is that you write, and this is a quote, "One aspect of my piece that greatly angered both trans men and stone butches was my claim that Brandon experienced enormous sexual frustration or a terrible diminishment of pleasure because, as reported by his lovers, he chose never to be touched on his vagina or his breasts. Why did I assume this, besides transphobic ignorance? In brief, I was projecting. Reader, I was sexually abused as a child, and I, at certain points in my life, have identified with stone butches because the intensity of genital sensations was too painfully overwhelming for me to want or be able to continue to experience genital touching. For a chunk of my life, I was greatly frustrated. I was resentful about what I experienced as diminished pleasure, and I projected this frustration and resentment onto Brandon." Okay, first of all, like, wow, way to put yourself out there. Like, oh my God. Like, I read it and I was like, fuck. She's like, is she dying? Like, does she have like nothing to lose anymore? Like, is this just like, you guys, I have nothing to lose. I have zero fucks to give. Like, here it is.
Thank you. You know, I have never spoken about that exactly. I've never spoken about that in print before. You know, I talk about sexual abuse and, you know, different kinds of weird genital sensations and emotions about that in my memoir. But I hadn't said that. I hadn't talked about how sometimes it was hard to be touched or too intense to be touched. You know, but you know what? You know, as I'm sure, you know, a lot of your audience knows, you know, a lot of people experience that sometimes in their lives. You know, we humans have lots of emotions about our genitals, and those of us who've been sexually abused or sometimes even just physically abused find the sensations too intense to always experience. So I think, I mean, something I wanted to say about that specifically is, you know, so I think there are a number of categories of people who don't want touch on their genitals, although they're sexual people, or don't want touch on some of their genitals or sometimes, and some trans folks, have that experience, and some cis folks have that experience, and, you know, and also it can change through people's lives, but people have that experience for different reasons. And I think it's important to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what comes across also in the article, is like some of these missteps that you are willing to own up to came from you actually identifying with Brandon.
Absolutely. I wish I had been allowed to write my article that way. I identified deeply with Brandon, but my editor at the time, you know, kind of was like, you know, well, this piece isn't about you, and, you know, we don't really care about your identification. You know, which of course the piece wasn't about me, but one interesting thing about Brandon Tina is that so many different kinds of people have identified with him. I think Kimberly Pierce has said, you know, something like everyone who's looked at this story found this person so compelling. Some of it was his, just the strength of his desire to live his life the way he wanted to.
In Nebraska,
in a really, really conservative part of Nebraska, not, you know, not the, the progressive city in Nebraska. Well, there's two of them, but not, no, actually, Lincoln is not that progressive. Omaha's, you know, sort of, kind of, almost progressive. But yeah, I did identify with him. And the part of me that, you know, I don't consider myself a Stone Butch now, but the part of me that has identified with Stone Butches in the past, you know, and a part of me that, I mean, honestly, something else that's important to talk about is, you know, sometimes people who identify as cis are not so entirely cis. And so what I mean by that is, I'm a woman, I'm a cis woman, I'm not trans, yet I'm someone who sometimes, my identity, my gender identity is that sometimes I'm a woman, sometimes I'm a man or a boy. And, you know, our gender conversation has opened up to a huge extent, but we're not yet talking about people who feel different ways or who may have some gender identification that's not part of a category.
Right. And I also think it's probably generational, too. I mean, I feel like these sort of 20-something people that I meet on college campuses, you know, think of me and my gender as kind of old school.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, like, you're over 40. Like, you don't even know. And you know, and I agree that, like, yes, you came out of the womb into a world different than the one I came into. And gender and sexual fluidity is, like, part of your life. It's part of, you know, you're like 13-year-olds are talking about, oh, I like boys and I like girls and it's totally cool and everyone's cool with it. But yeah, I think that sometimes people aren't sort of thinking, well, if all of these genders have existed and now we've given name to them and language to them, then all those folks have existed as well. Like, even those over 40.
No, absolutely. Yes. Even us over 40, we have funky genders and sexualities. Yes, we certainly do.
So you also brought up the question of race in this article and why you, nor actually anyone else at the time, delved into that. You said neither my article nor any of the major media representations of this case had seriously examined the possibility that race may have played a role in this, because one of the friends of Brandon's who was killed, Philip Devine, was African-American. They were in a notably all-white town. So I'm interested if you have more thoughts about the question of race and how it played a role here.
Absolutely. Well, I'll just say that my piece did talk about the fact that Falls City was an incredibly racist town, and something interesting about the Tisdales, this family, one of whose young women, Lana, was dating Brandon, and those of you who've seen Boys Don't Cry will remember her as the girlfriend in the movie. Lana's family, who are white, was despised in Falls City, partly because they were on welfare, but partly because they were white women, some of whom often dated black men. And Lana's sister Leslie had a biracial child. This young man, Philip Devine, who was murdered along with Brandon and with a a white cis woman who had been a friend and also at one point a lover of Brandon's. Philip Devine had met Lana's sister Leslie in the Job Corps, and they had started some kind of involvement. And then he came to in a way bravely, like Brandon, also came to Falls City, this incredibly racist town that had once had it had been what is called a sundown town, which are towns in the U.S. where if African Americans stayed past nightfall, they would run a serious risk of being murdered. In Falls City as well, the local Hardee's, which was the only fast food restaurant, didn't serve African Americans. So in my piece, I did say that I did talk about the racism in the town, and I talked about Philip Devine being black, but I didn't get that race may possibly have been a motive in him being killed. It's kind of tricky because there's a lot of evidence that the two killers, Tom Nissen and John Lauder, went to this farmhouse where Brandon was staying explicitly to silence Brandon. Brandon had gone ahead and gone to the police when he was raped by Nissen and Lauder. And of course, the police were horrible and transphobic, and were found in a federal suit to have been a party to Brandon's death by not apprehending his rapist before they could go ahead and kill him. And in fact, after Brandon was raped, he called his mother and said that the two rapists had told him, you keep your mouth shut or we're going to shut it permanently for you. And the killers had also gone, Brandon was hiding out. The killers had gone to Lincoln, Nebraska, where Brandon was from, to find him, I think, to try to silence him. So there's a lot of evidence that probably silencing Brandon was the main reason they went to this farmhouse and shot people. I have not found out until recently that one of the killers, Tom Nissen, was once in a white supremacist group. A white supremacist group with a really weird name.
A really bad name. I remember. Yes. A dumb name. Yeah.
Oh, it's the White American Group for White Americans. It sounds like a joke.
Right. Right.
But Nissen is very openly racist. I didn't know that at the time because he didn't let me interview him. But eventually, interviewers years later found out that he was very openly racist and he had been in a white supremacist group, which does make me think that that racism may have played a role in why they killed him. And there's a whole parallel story, actually, two romances going on. Two romances that may have brought up hate.
That break the rules.
Exactly.
As the rules are written by white supremacists. Yes.
Exactly. So Brandon's romance was with Lana because he was a trans man, and Philip's romance with Lana's sister Leslie because he was African American and she was white. And that there's a whole parallel story there that really seems fascinating that I think has not been explored in enough detail. He was disabled as well. I believe he was an amputee who used a prosthesis. In many ways, he's someone for whom hatred or bias may have played a role in killing him.
And the idea, too, that the sort of it also strikes me that the rule breakers are hanging out with other rule breakers. And it's like, let's round. There's a sort of a mentality of like, oh, we've got three. We've got three people here who we don't agree with and who we hate.
Yes. Yes. And there's so much racism. There's so much racism in the town. Mm-hmm. John Gregory, the late John Gregory Dunn, who was married to Joan Didion, who was a writer of The New Yorker, he did actually a quite awful piece about this murder 3 years after it happened. But he interviewed Nissen extensively. And in this piece, he quotes the mother of the cis woman who was killed, Lisa Lambert, and she speaks very strangely in a way that sounds quite racist about coming into the farmhouse and discovering Philip Devine's body. She says something like, you know, there was a Negro on the couch, so I looked away, almost as though just his being black was some sort of appalling sign that she didn't want to look into too further.
Wow. That's a detail. Ugh.
Yeah,
I didn't want to know. Okay, right. We need to take another commercial break. That's awful. But ultimately, what moves me about this piece is the idea of going back and going back over your notes and going back over what was going on for you at the time. And it's a fascinating look at sort of a writer's process and how we frame a story, right? And this one was a really, really important one. Okay, so let's take a break. When we come back, more on this. And also, I want to talk to Donna about her memoir, Growing Up Golem, How I Survived My Mother, Brooklyn, and Some Really Bad Dates. You don't want to miss that. So stay with us. Happy Pride from the Pleasure Chest. All month long, the Pleasure Chest is showing their love with a series of queer-themed workshops designed to give folks a safe space to explore identity, gender, and sexuality. Don't miss classes on queering your sex, strapping it on, anal play, tantra for queers, a range of SM topics, plus special guest educators Damon Holtzum and Sunny Rogers. Remember, when you attend any workshop, The Pleasure Chest, you receive 15% off your purchase that night. Bonus! You can also find Pleasure Chest street teams with awesome giveaways at Pride Parades in Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago. Visit PleasureChest.com for the full lineup of events and curated queer collections, such as M4M, Queer Couples, and Strap On, Get Off. Use the coupon code Tristan to receive a free massage candle with every purchase and pride on.
Are you LGBTQIA, genderqueer or gender variant, a sex worker, an activist, a polyamorous person? Well, the open list features therapists, sexuality and relationship coaches, traditional and alternative healthcare providers, mediators, lawyers, and more who are poly-aware, kink competent, sex positive, queer affirming, and anti-oppression. They work with clients with alternative sexualities and relationship structures, including open relationships, polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, swinging, BDSM, and kink. They serve the unique needs of folks who think and live outside the box. To search for a professional in your area, go to the open list at openingup.net. If you're a professional who'd like to be listed, use the coupon code OPENTRIAL for a free 1-year trial.
Life on the Swing Set is heading to paradise for the 7th time, and once again, we're taking over Desire Resort Riviera Maya in Cancun, Mexico.
with this year's hosts, me, Cooper, Ginger, Dylan, JV and Chara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, and author, podcaster, and feminist porn filmmaker Tristan Taramino. Our takeover allows us to mold the resort in our geeky, sexy, and inclusive image with orgies, classes about pegging, flogging, and fisting, theme nights, a full dungeon night, naked karaoke, mutual masturbation, and massages.
From November 3rd through the 10th, 2018, this beautiful all-inclusive resort will be full of sexy swing setters from every letter in the LGBTQA spectrum. Poly, swingers, nudists, kinksters, doms, subs, and those who are just curious about what a week at a sexy resort offers.
We take all the best of the swing set. Our values, our experience, our co-hosts, our community, and we bring it all together with the best resort staff on earth to create a queer, kink, and poly-friendly, consent-aware, and sexy-as-hell experience for everyone who joins us.
To come with us on our Swing Set Takes Desire 2018 trip and hear us podcast about our previous trips, head over to ssdesire.com. We'll be there to welcome you home.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm so caught up in the show that I've forgotten to do my like regular commercial things, people, you know, so that the people who support the show, you know, will still pay for it. Anyway, so you just heard the commercial for Swing Set Takes Desire, which is this this amazing event in Cancun, Mexico. It's happening November 3rd to the 10th. If you are polyamorous, if you are a swinger, a certain kind of a swinger, a sort of neo-nouveau swinger, if you're an exhibitionist, if you're a kinky person, if you're queer, if you're pansexual, if you're bi, you got to get yourself to this amazing vacation of a lifetime. I had such an incredible time last year. I'm coming back this year, and I want to see you there. So go to ssdesire.com to find out more about it and reserve your spot. I'm talking today with Donna Minkowitz, who wrote this great piece that you've got to go read over at the Village Voice, where she revisits a piece from the mid-90s about Brandon-Tina. It's called How I Broke and Botched the Brandon-Tina Story. So it's it tells you right there in the headline how she feels about it. There's no sort of like mincing words. And there's no mincing words in this memoir. It's called Growing Up Golem, How I Survived My Mother, Brooklyn, and Some Really Bad Dates. It was written in 2013, and my first thought after reading this book was, wow, that was honest, bracingly so. You laid yourself bare. And I know there's probably more things. I feel like I know everything about you now, as one does sometimes when one reads a memoir, and I know there's things about you I don't know. But you let it all out there. And how did you have the courage to even do that?
Oh, what a nice question. You know, it can be really, really empowering to tell the truth, is some of it. You know, often when there are things we feel we can never say, you know, that we're just not allowed to say, maybe growing up, you know, never, ever, ever, ever must not say, you know, even on the order of, you know, I'm mad at you, parent, you know, when you did this thing, you hurt my feelings, like, no, must not say. So, it can feel wonderful, to say the stuff, you know, and some of it is not, some of it that I say in the book is not stuff that's flattering, to myself. But that can that can feel empowering too. And just another thing, the I think something that made it easier is the book has this fantasy element. So a golem is this creature from Jewish legend. You know, you may have heard of the Golem of Prague in the 18th century when the 17th century when there was a pogrom in Czechoslovakia. A rabbi made a golem, which is this this animated creature made of clay that's like a person, but not really a person, sort of subhuman. But the golem was made, you know, to kind of kill all the people who were attacking the Jews. So this book, you know, it's a real memoir about my life, but it's written as though instead of giving birth to me, my mother had created me through Jewish magic as her own personal golem servant.
So there is this element of magical realism, which also, it makes for this fantasy, but it's also, it's just so well written. I mean, I don't like magical realism in general, or I don't, it doesn't appeal to me, but it's just so well written. And Cecilia Tan actually reviewed this book, and I want to quote, because I just thought, it was brilliant the way she sort of summarized this. She said, there's a way in which this can be read as a coming of age story, but unlike the ingenues in fiction who come of age when they are 21 or 25 or whatever the hip age is these days for tender young things, Minkowitz doesn't come of age until she writes this memoir. It's almost as if you can feel her maturing, growing, and learning while writing the book. That's one of its strongest elements. I mean, it resonates for me personally in so many different ways. And but this idea that you have such a level of self-awareness and, you know, and that you're willing to like say, oh, I was horrible. I was being horrible there.
It is liberating. I forgot what I was going to say.
But you also, okay, so one of the hottest parts of the book is this relationship you have with a married woman. She's not straight. She's a married queer woman. It's got some power dynamics. It's just like a really hot thing. And so I wonder, and then you talk about all these different partners that you've had or even dates. And I don't know if you're using their real names, but you say like awful things about them. And are you like afraid there might be like an angry mob now?
No, I didn't use anyone's real name, except in the end, I used the real name of my partner at the end of the book, Karen, who I marry in the end. But I don't use anyone else's real names. I tried to disguise some people. You know, I gave them different jobs, you know, sometimes different places where they lived. It is true that I say unflattering things about many people. You know what? I mean, I don't know. One ex wrote to me recently, and she did not seem bothered by her portrayal, even though it wasn't flattering. So I'm glad about that.
Okay, so it's okay. It's just so overwhelmingly honest in a way that, like, so this book for me is kind of like, you know, we live, especially on social media now, these sort of curated lives. And everyone looks really good and they look really happy and everything's going well. And, you know, as one of my favorite people in the world, Claire Potter, says, she sometimes emails me and says, well, judging from Instagram, everything is perfect. So how is it really? You know, it must be awful. And she's usually right. So it's sort of the opposite of this sort of bright and shiny airbrushed Photoshopped Instagram lives that we see these days. It's much barer and more raw, and it's ugly in parts.
Yeah, it is. it is ugly in parts, that's for sure. What do I want to say about that? It gets less ugly and more redeeming by the end.
It does. It does. It's true.
But Instagram, Claire Potter. Oh yeah. I mean, the one thing, I wrote about my family in the book as well. And, my parents had both passed away. So it wasn't so hard to write about them, honestly. I have two sisters, and, it has been an issue for me how to portray them in the book. And I have very, very sort of strained and fraught relationships with my sisters, but I gave them different names and some other different characteristics, which I think helps. To be honest with you, I know some memoir writers who will go and send the material about family members to the family members and ask for reaction, not to give them veto power, but just to open a dialogue. And I do wish I had done that. I think I would like to do that going forward. I think one thing I learned after writing the book is that there can be ways that you can write the book in all its truth and still attempt to preserve the relationships.
Mm. Now that's a whole nother book.
Right?
That's like a whole other book. You sending people your portrayal of them and writing about them in ways that that preserve the relationship. Yeah, that would be like a feat.
Yes, I think. I mean, can't always do it because not all relationships can be preserved. But,
right.
But you can try. You can make space.
Yeah.
I feel like in this culture, there's this artificial division between art and everything else, and this idea like, oh no, of course for my art, I must write it this way and not think about like, no, who cares if my relationship breaks up or all my friends are hurt. And that's
this is
that's
the sort
not,
of Anne Lamott school, doesn't she say, if people don't want to be written about in a bad light, they should have treated you better.
I agree with her there.
Okay.
I'm all for that. But I guess what I'm thinking about more is that there's some opposition. Like, you have to sacrifice, your life, especially your personal life, to be an artist, to make good art. And I don't actually think so. What I'm trying to do now is try to make art that that can keep relationships going, that you want to keep going and still manage to speak the truth. I actually think that can be done.
So what are you working on right now? Can you tell us? Is it a secret?
I can tell you. I'm in the beginning stages of a novel about marriage. It's about a marriage between two women. And, I am married, so I've been thinking a lot myself about, what it's like to be in this intensely committed relationship with another person. And, of course, it's very challenging, but it seems very worth it. And my working title for the book is Hot and Naked Wives.
Mm. See, it's like you already have the title of the Bravo show that's going to be adapted from the novel, it sounds like.
Oh, that would be, yes, that would be wonderful.
Right? Executive produced by Andy Cohen. So make sure you like copyright it or something.
Right?
You also in the book talk very openly about your disability. You have repetitive stress injury. And this is why it's such a compelling story, is because you're a writer and at some point in your life, and you're only in your 30s, your body begins to break down in such a way that the one thing you can't do is write. So tell me, first of all, how you are now, because in 2013, it felt like you maybe would never like pick up a grapefruit again.
Oh, right. Well, I should say the book came out in 2013, but the present time of the memoir really is more in the early 2000s. I guess the memoir ends in 2005. So my condition had already improved a lot by the time the book came out. Gosh, Pilates and massage and acupuncture helped me. I still am disabled. I can only type using voice dictation software, you know, whether on a computer or on a phone. And of course, it's not perfect. It's often frustrating, but it's much better than it was. I'm hardly ever in pain, although it does flare up sometimes. So I have a disability that I imagine I'll always have, but my life has gotten so much better.
And what do you credit that to? Because, I mean, you talk about finding this one doctor who was in France and like, but was talking to you on the phone first. But it seemed like the excruciating pain was like ongoing and wouldn't stop.
Yes. Well, in the book, dealing with the pain of RSI, this repetitive strain injury, is also a metaphor for kind of just for dealing with all the shit, just all of it, and learning how to take care of oneself, or, you know, begin to try to. I mean, it was real as well. I really did face those challenges. You know, I couldn't pick up a coffee cup, and, you know, I'd walk into the store and I would try to have to get the man to reach me a can of tuna fish off the shelf and put it in my bag, you know, after I paid for it, because I literally could not pick up a can of tuna fish. But, you know, on a non-metaphorical level as well, I learned how to take care of myself, kind of, you know, in a loving way, you know, that I could sort of be the loving parent in charge of my own health. So I did a lot of things. I said no a lot. You know, I said no to, you know, activities with my hands that I couldn't do, whether for work, I had to turn down work, you know, or with friends and sometimes people I was dating, you know, like, huh, why can't you do this thing? And, you know, and I got a lot of treatment as well, but that was another form of taking care. And I do think it really helped heal my arms.
Well, I recommend this memoir to pretty much anyone. I was like making a list in my head of people I want to read it as I was going through it. It's called Growing Up Golem. And Donna Minkowitz, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
People can find Donna at DonnaMinkowitz.com. She's on Facebook, Donna Minkowitz, and on Twitter, brilliantly, she got the handle at Minkowitz. That's pretty brilliant. Okay, before I go, I want to do a shout out to the Pleasure Chest and let you know what's going on there coming up in July. So summer's here. Whether you're looking for a travel vibe for your upcoming getaway, a gift for a partner, or you just want to try something new, the Pleasure Chest has all your needs covered. Did someone say buy one, get one BOGO? Yes. Now is the best time to shop during the Pleasure Chest's annual BOGO sale. Buy one and get half off on all vibrating toys through July. Perfect if you want to take your play to the next level, if you've been holding out for a luxury vibe, or you and your partner can't decide on the perfect vibe and you get two. Come in or shop online for the best deals of the year, from bullet vibes to wands to cock rings and anal toys. The possibilities are endless because it's on all vibrating toys, people. Grab your perfect pleasure and get a taste of summer at the Pleasure Chest. Go to thepleasurechest.com to take advantage of that sale or go to one of their stores. And remember, they've got free classes as part of their Pleasure Ed program. Coming up in LA, July 8th, Intimate Partner Yoga. In New York City, July 5th, Multi-Orgasmic Ultimate O. That sounds very promising. And in Chicago, July 11th, Advanced G-Spotting. So you don't want to miss those. Thanks for spending the hour with me. And I want to I want to acknowledge all the people that make this show happen. My executive producer, Karen Dana, my senior producer, Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of the show. You can listen to us on Stitcher, on iTunes, at the Voice America website, on the Voice America app. And if you're over at iTunes, you could give us a review because that helps even more people find our show. I'd appreciate that. Until the next time, you can catch me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Well, I will only be showing you the good parts of my life at Tristan Terramino. If you want to intervene and ask me about the bad parts, that's fine. But for now, I'm just going to stick with the nice parts. And the show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. It's great to follow the show while you're listening because Raymond does a brilliant job. Also, happy birthday to Raymond. It was just his birthday. And you know how much I rely on him and how he is my angel on so many levels. So happy birthday to Raymond Johnson, senior producer. Raymond, I would totally get you front row tickets to Janelle Monáe, but I can't. But that's my wish for you, okay? There's something in the mail. Thanks, guys. Tune in next time. Until then, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Terramino on Voice America Variety.